When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I want to welcome everyone to episode number 6 of Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, a 50-year retrospective. Madison Square Garden, a mecca of professional wrestling, a building that every wrestler wanted to wrestle in. We record one show a month to coincide with the 50th anniversary of a wrestling house show at Madison Square Garden. And to help us look back, as always, a man that went to every wrestling house show at Madison Square Garden for 5 years straight, starting at August 30th, 1971, Mr. Wrestling himself, John Arizzi. John, I know this is a weird question, but how you feeling?
I'm telling you, it's still a challenge for those of you. I don't even remember when we taped the last podcast. Did I announce that I got COVID or no?
No, it was. You didn't get it yet.
Okay. Well, I got it, and got it on January the 26th, which was a Wednesday. I went out to dinner with some friends for my birthday. Turned 65, and
happy birthday!
Within 48 hours, I had some symptoms and. Within 3 days, I was down for the count, and here we are 2.5 weeks later. Even though, you know, there's no more fever, obviously, there's no body aches, there's no closed throat and all the other things, I'm still brain fog and lethargic and getting tired really fast. So it's been a challenge for me, and I still don't sound right. I still have that in my voice. I could just, you know, hear it. But it was, it's been a really rough 2.5 weeks, but we'll get through it. And I'm just happy to be here to do this. And I'm glad I had my vaccination and my booster, because I believe that certainly worked to, you know, keep me out of the hospital and keep me out of the ground.
You had all your shots.
Oh, yeah. I had the two plus the booster. But I had the booster in August, so it might have waned with its effectiveness. And once there's a fourth one available for people my age, I'm going to take it. It's crazy. But it's an odd thing, man. And you get these, I've been getting these crazy dreams, man. And it's so funny, Tim, that now that we're talking about Madison Square Garden from 50 years ago, I had a very detailed dream last night about me wrestling Kevin Sullivan at Madison Square Garden. And I forgot my trunks. I forgot my ring gear, and I couldn't wrestle. And there is a young Kevin Sullivan, and we're supposed to be working against each other at Madison Square Garden. I'm like, who gets a chance to wrestle at Madison Square Garden? I mean, everybody, you know, this is a dream for everyone. And now I forgot my tights, and it was, you know, a dark area in Madison Square Garden, and I couldn't get in the lot in the back in the dressing room. It was an odd, long dream last night. Very ironic that we're taping today and I had this dream last night.
The details that come out during one of those dreams when you're, you know, because of the hallucinating or very detailed dreams is always amazing to me.
Well, maybe because I knew we were taping today, it was in my subconscious too. And, you know, just kind of worried about how it was going to sound today. And I had Madison Square Garden on the brain, and I dreamt. But, you know, even who my opponent was, which is a good friend of mine, Kevin Sullivan, and I never got there because I didn't have my ring gear with me. It was crazy. and my family was there. My nephew was a little boy. It was kind of, it was like nuts. The dream was nuts, man.
Well, I'm so glad to see you're doing okay. You're doing better because we've talked on the phone a few times, and you sounded terrible. You sounded terrible, and I wish there was something I can do for it. And all you needed was rest, and you're still getting through this. It's been a few weeks right now.
Man.
You're still resting, so I'm wishing you the best, my friend. We're gonna speed through this podcast as quick as we can,
okay?
So you can get back to sleep and get better again. And we want to thank first of all, we want to thank all our friends at Patreon for our positive response on the podcast. The community keeps on growing. It's www.patreon.com/John Arizzi. John, I know you're always adding, besides the podcast, you're always adding things to the Patreon account. What are we adding, and how much can people get into it for?
Well, it's $5 to get in the door, and that gives you access to the podcast early. It gets you all the archives of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show, and that's for $5, the two podcasts and the complete archives. And then you can go up to $10 level, which gives you bonus audio. $25 level gives you bonus video. Plus, I send out vintage wrestling magazines beginning at the $25 level. You'll get one magazine from the 60s or 70s with that $25 a month membership. And we do Zoom calls as well. Or maybe not Zoom, maybe StreamYard. We do those. And then the other two levels are $50 and $100, and you get 8mm films, you get photo sets from my archives, and you get more magazines in the mail. So, for example, if someone is spending $100 a month, they'll get 4 vintage magazines from the 60s, 70s, 80s sometimes. So those 4 magazines alone are really worth the $100, and then the shipping cost involved. So you're getting something back for every level. For $5 to get you in the door, I mean, it's a great deal, and it really helps support the production of the podcast that we do, and it's really a great deal for anyone who wants to be involved as a patron.
Absolutely. And one of the great things is you're always loading more things up there. We're tying it into both episodes of the podcast. So if we talk about something, like we talk about Freddie Blassie, there'll be some Freddie Blassie stuff up there.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever we're talking about every week, there's the article that's going up. I don't know if you got a chance to put that up yet because of COVID. You had the article with Jimmy Valiant that you wrote for him, the interview that you wrote for him with Jimmy Valiant. We're going to post that up there. There's a lot, always adding. So, you know, you can use it as a companion piece to the podcast and go back and listen to things and, oh, this is what they're talking about and things. And speaking of which, I know that we were into February right now. And by the way, patreon.com/John Arizzi if you want to join the Patreon. One of the reasons I really enjoy doing this podcast, and we're into February right now, and I wanted to bring this up to you, John. I was on Twitter beginning of the month, and this great tweet came out, and a picture came with it. I want to read it to you. It's a wrestling tweet, and it says, today's the first day of Black History Month. For us wrestling fans, it's a chance to dive into some of the best matches of all time. Let's dig in and pay respect to the great ones of the past. Okay, so that's really great. And there's a picture that this artist did of all these great African-American wrestlers that were in the WWF or in wrestling. And I started looking at it, and it's pretty neat. You know, you got like Ron Simmons on there. You got Mark Henry on there, Kamala, Ivory, I think I see there, like D'Lo Brown. And I'm starting to look around for other people, and there's not a lot of older wrestlers on this. And I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, where, you know, I see Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That's pretty cool. But what about his dad, Rocky Johnson, or Tony Atlas? They were the first African-American tag team champions. How about Ernie the Cat Ladd or Bobo Brazil? How about Sweet Georgia Brown, first African-American female wrestler, or Sailor Art Thomas or Tiger Conway Sr.? And it was making me think about what we do here and why it's so important what we talk about. It was very nice. It was a great piece, and I'm not trying to put him down, but it never really goes into detail about, like, how about older wrestlers? Besides the 90s, wrestling's been around for a while, and there are great African-American pioneers that we aren't being talked about anymore, and that's what I wanted to bring up with you. Let's go back to the 70s right now, when you started to go to the Garden, the WWF. 1971, you started going in August. Tell me about, you know, any African-American wrestlers. Were there a lot of guys in the card? Were there a few? Did they come in, go out? How did this work back then?
There wasn't a lot of black wrestlers, at least in the days that I started going at the Garden. I mean, Sonny King was one that stands out. He was on several of the shows in the early days, and because we're not talking about the 60s where Sweet Daddy Siki was prominent and Bobo Brazil was a mainstay in the WWWF, and then comes back in the mid-70s to compete. But there really wasn't a lot of black performers who wrestled on the cards. Just looking at some of these results and archives from back then, I mean, I'm looking, and the only name that I see that's really standing out is Sonny King. I'm talking about the days when I started going to them. And you look at every single card. Of course, you had a big Puerto Rican influence with Pedro Morales, Manuel Soto, Victor Rivera. But when it came to black performers, there just wasn't a lot of them that appeared at Madison Square Garden. Or even in that time period in pro wrestling, there wasn't a prominent number of black wrestlers back then.
I always heard stories about, if there was one in the territory and someone else came into the territory, one would have to leave or something to that effect. Was that true?
Yeah, I never heard that, but it wouldn't surprise me with the way people thought about things back then. Obviously, we're in a very different time and place where that wouldn't even be considered. But years ago, I mean, you know, I don't remember, you know, more than one or two black athletes on a show at any given time. I mean, later on, you know, you had the Ernie Ladds of the world who came back and the Bobo Brazils, and there really isn't, I can't like rattle off 10 names to you.
Yeah.
Because it just wasn't there.
And the names I rattled off they span probably like 30 to 40 years of wrestling.
Yeah.
So it was not prominent as it is today. And I appreciate seeing the stuff from the 90s on, but this is why we do the podcast, because times change and, you know, not a lot of people are around anymore. We talk about this all the time, that actually went to the shows at Madison Square Garden. And I find it interesting that we talk about this. And I would love to hear a podcast also, say, from world class, from people who went to world class wrestling at the Sportatorium. Mm-hmm. Or how about Memphis wrestling? How was it? How'd you get tickets? How'd
or
you
Los
go?
Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Back then.
That, and then
I know Earl Maynard was a prominent black wrestler back then in the Los Angeles area. And Bearcat Wright was out there as well in the early 70s. And there's another wrestler who they called Pork Chop Cash.
Really?
Out in Los Angeles. And he, Pork Chop Cash, was actually a guy named Al Nelson, who was kind of a jobber guy in the WWWF. And then he goes out to L.A. and he wins the title. And when they changed his name to Pork Chop Cash. And he was an accomplished guy. But I always thought that that name was just not appropriate or right, because it seemed to be something that was stereotypical. Really, a lot of the promoters were in that mindset of utilizing black athletes in a very stereotypical way.
Kamala, back in the day, he was a Sugar Bear Harris. And it was, I think it was Jerry Lawler that changed him into Kamala, made that character of Kamala, which is still kind of a racist character. It's a caricature,
yeah,
pretty much.
Even current day, Attitude Era, when you have a guys like Papa Shango, right? Or the Kamala character. Or,
yeah.
Those were all kind of really it wasn't right. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, stereotypical. Yeah, I know I knew where you're going with that.
I can't talk very well, Tim.
I know, I'm sorry. But it is Black History Month, and we wanted to shine a little light of what it was like back in the day at the Garden for African-American wrestlers trying to make a name for themselves, or maybe they'll just come in and do a spot show. Well, let's go to today's show. February 21st, 1972. Attendance, 22,090. Another sellout for the WWWF. Build up for TV, John. Tickets, same way as normal. You watch it on TV. Anything special you can remember back then?
Well, I do remember the card, in my opinion, was not the strongest Madison Square Garden card, but of course I was hooked, so I was going to go. This was still me sitting in the second level. I was corrected by one of our listeners saying that it wasn't the Loge, it was the Promenade or something. But I remember it being the Loge. That's where I was sitting for this show. But it wasn't a show that I was very over-the-top excited about, because it just seemed to be a little blasé with the main event with Morales Tanaka and not really a lot of sizzle to this one.
I get you. I want to go back a little. So if you're not really sure, Madison Square Garden is in the United States. It's in New York. New York is a state and also a city in the United States. So this is in the state
of New York. Well, it's New York, New York. A city so nice, they named it twice.
Exactly, Tim. Exactly. And
I learned that from my daddy back in the day.
So New York, New York, New York City, also known as Manhattan, that's where Madison Square Garden is, and it's on an island. And it's not like other arenas where you can, you know, there are a lot of people that live in Manhattan, but there's more people that live in the surrounding areas outside Manhattan. And how do you get into Manhattan? You take the train in. So you used to take the train all the time to the garden, and it's a different experience taking the train to the garden because you're actually limited pretty much. So when you get in, it's one thing, but leaving, you got to leave by a certain time or you're going to miss your train.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the train was 11:10 that left Penn Station to Babylon, and the next one after that wasn't going to be until, I think, 12:10. They didn't have any express trains, so they were all locals, so it still took you an hour and a half to get back home anyway. But if you missed that 11:10 train, you were out of luck for at least an hour, and no one wanted to sit around in Penn Station after 11 o'clock.
No. It's not the nicest place in the world. And also, the WWWF knew at the time when the trains left because they got you out in time for the train.
Well, yeah, they had the New York State law anyway where you had to end the show at 11 p.m. one way or the other because that was the curfew. So you would notice that during the last match of the night, a lot of people would be getting up out of their seats and leaving, which is another reason why the main event really was never last.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And we're going to go into that today. First match, it's a midget match, also known as Little People Match. Farmer Jerome and Joey Russell defeated Frenchie Lamont and Sky Lolo in 17 minutes, 32 seconds. That seems like a long time, John, for a match.
It was two falls out of three. So the baby face little guys, they won two falls to one. And what I really enjoyed about this was seeing Sky Lolo, who was just still a legendary midget wrestler back then and just a little old guy, bald. And it was entertainment. It was, it's one of those comedy matches that they start off with. The midget performers were always there for entertainment value and a lot of times opened up the show. They always entertained. And Frenchie Lamont I'd heard of for a long time, and seeing him and Sky Lolo, I mean, it was kind of special for me to see those guys because I read about them in the magazines.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did they always have the same referee with them? Because it seemed like they really tied in the referee a lot to the matches.
No. No, no, there were different referees. Imagine that if they would have had a special referee just for the little people.
Yeah.
Like the little people referee.
Oh, see, that would have been something. But I always see when I'm watching those matches on YouTube, it just seems like the referee's really involved in the match.
Yeah. I mean, they do a lot of spots, a lot of comedy spots where, you know, sometimes the referee would get bit on the keister, as Vince McMahon would say, the keister. Or they'd roll around. They do these spots where the referee would pick up the little guy and put him back in the corner if he was running in without the tag. It was always fun to watch. It was always great entertainment. And, of course, we don't see them anymore. But back then, they were always a staple on a lot of the garden shows and a lot of the house shows in the area.
Let's go on to match number two. Pampero Firpo defeated Rene Goulet in 4 minutes, 55 seconds. This, John, was a big win, beating one of the half of the tag team champions.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell that they were giving Firpo a big push, and he was somebody that was drawing some excitement. You knew that he was going up the ladder and would eventually get a title match against Pedro Morales there at the Garden. But Firpo, when he came in with the Grand Wizard as his manager, brought some excitement, and He was a legendary performer, and he was somebody that there was a great mystique about. He used to have his shrunken head with him. One of the great things about the shrunken head, it was called Shimu, and it was actually a real shrunken head, and his kids have it to this day. I had a really lengthy interview with his daughter, Mary, after Pampero had passed. What great stories that she had. I mean, the guy was born, like I said, in 1930 in Argentina. He grew up around sports. His father was a promoter of boxing. He wasn't the best ring technician, but he was wild. The wild bull of the pampas is what they called him. And finishing move is the claw hold, which he had. But he was a short in stature, but he had this wild, frizzy hair, and he had this booming voice, and we're going to play a promo of his in a future episode when he gets up against Chief J. Strongbow, I believe, and we have some audio clips of him back in the day. And he was just wild and big, and he had charisma, and he was somebody that won a lot of titles around the world, and he was a big family man. One of the biggest reasons he left the business was one of his kids was sick, and he decided to take a job in the post office so he could have steady income and take care of his family. But he's somebody that I really would have loved to know because how great he was and how short-lived his reign was in the WWF. He was only in for the one shot, and then he was gone. And then he did a lot of work out in Los Angeles and in Hawaii and San Francisco. I mean, he spent most of his time out on the West Coast.
He was very influential with other wrestlers, just like we talked about before, Macho Man Randy Savage. Furpo was the first one to go, oh, yeah!
Right. He did that. His promos were really, really good. I mean, he was ahead of his time with a lot of catchphrases and no doubt would have made a fortune in merchandising today if he was with the WWE. And he would be like, I will take care of business. And then he'd always end it with, oh, yeah. You know, just wild man. Legendary performer. And him up against Rene Goulet and him getting the victory in a rather short period of time in only 4 minutes, 4 minutes, 55 seconds. They were giving him a big push. And he was getting just a big of a push on television winning each and every week.
Do you ever hear this story? Richie put it down in this story in our notes, is that Pampero Furpo didn't like to be hit in the stomach.
No, he had an operation in his abdomen that might have not gone well or it never healed properly. And he was always afraid that if you would hit him in the abdomen, that he would die. So he would tell guys, do not hit me in the stomach. I will die. He had surgery, it was really, I think, in the 60s or even in the 50s. You know, before a match, he'd tell a guy, don't hit me in the stomach, I'll die. That was kind of what he would tell everybody. And it went around the locker rooms and wherever he appeared. People knew that you're not going to hit this guy in the stomach because there was something wrong.
And that's amazing that you can even have any sort of a career in, you know, wrestling or any contact sport after that, knowing that you could die. And then do a match that was still great.
Yeah, and his body started wearing down a little bit. I think his final match was in 1986.
Wow.
So he did last a fairly long time. But he's legendary with the territories in L.A., San Francisco, Oregon. He was a big, big, big time star and sorely missed. A great family, by the way. And he did a lot in Detroit. He had what a run he had with the Sheik, because he turned babyface against the Sheik. And they had a legendary run at the Cobo Hall in Detroit.
I could just see a lot of wrestling moves being used in that match.
Yeah. Lots of blood.
And what I love about these also is, if you have any questions about this, go check them out on YouTube. They have some of the great stuff on YouTube. So you can always go check out YouTube. If you hear about a wrestler, you've never seen him before, go check it out on YouTube. Let's go to match number 3. Victor Rivera defeated Juan Caruso in 5 minutes, 8 seconds.
Yeah, that was kind of it was almost like a TV jobber match in a lot of ways. I mean, Caruso you know, he was an enhancement guy, a preliminary guy, what they called them back in the day. And Rivera was always the fan favorite, and it was kind of a easy victory for Victor Rivera that night.
And Victor Rivera, big name in the 70s, never really heard about him after that in the WWE.
Well, he burned bridges when he left as the tag team champion. He and Dominic DiNucci won the tag team titles, and they left. They're the ones that beat the Valiant Brothers, I believe. And Rivera got an offer from the IWA, which was starting up with Eddie Einhorn in the Northeast, and he left without even dropping the title. The time-honored tradition didn't do that, so Vince McMahon put Irish Pat Barrett in as the replacement for Victor Rivera, and they held the title a brief period of time before the Blackjacks won.
It's amazing how, like, history gets changed and then swept under the rug.
Rivera was a big star. I mean, he was probably number two to the Puerto Rican fans, I mean, right under Pedro Morales. And he was always someone that people had talked about of getting the strap, of being given the world title, but that never happened. It could have been not in the stars from him, but he did go out and had a really big-time heel run in Los Angeles, and had the Americas title there for a while as well, and had a pretty major feud with John Tolis.
Interesting. Let's go to match number four. Baron Miguel Sacluna defeated Manuel Soto in 6 minutes, 14 seconds.
Yeah, and this was another one where Soto was up there against Sacluna because Sacluna was going to get a title match in March against Morales. So he got a pretty easy victory over Manuel Soto. And it surprised a lot of people that Sacluna was getting the title shot. And it was almost like a throwaway. And I'll never forget that show. We'll talk about it next month, obviously, because that was the only time that my dad went to pro wrestling with me.
That was the match he saw. He's
like, yeah, he went with me on the show. That was March 13th of 72.
Match number five of the night. King Curtis defeated Gorilla Monsoon by a countout. 7 minutes, yeah. 16 seconds. That's a big deal.
That is a big deal. And Curtis was, of course, was also in line to get a title match, but the match against Monsoon, and we'll talk more about what happened with him and Monsoon in the very next edition of this program, because this was the first of two matches that they had with Monsoon and Curtis. This one prompted the rematch because Monsoon, there was no count out. I mean, there was no pinfall or submission. It was a count out. And the way they ended this match, you knew that there was going to be a rematch because Curtis's was, you know, wild man, animal, you know, with Captain Lou Albano, and Monsoon was probably number two babyface at the time in the promotion under Morales. And it was a pretty wild match, but Monsoon got counted out leading up to a rematch, which I don't want to give a spoiler away. But that rematch is very memorable, and we'll talk about it next month. It was a very violent, memorable match with some interesting outside interference.
Well, I look forward to that. Looking back now at these matches that they're putting on this year, they're building up Pedro for a big event, you know, but they're not putting a lot of big names against him. Why do you think that is? Why wouldn't you want to build up Pedro with better people?
I don't know what the philosophy was behind that. It was really kind of surprising that, you know, a lot of these guys that were even tag team wrestlers were getting their shots against Morales. Maybe they wanted to see how he was drawing. I don't know. I mean, I wish I knew what the philosophy was with Vince McMahon Sr. back then. It was the matchmaker and booker and promoter of that show. It started to, like, this would be the last sellout in a while, because what we're talking about right now is like the fact that there weren't big superstars going into the ring to challenge Morales. I mean, the attendance just started dropping dramatically. Even with the next show, Bruno Sammartino returns for a shot in the March show. But this one was 22,000 sellout. Then it went to 18,000 in March. Then it went to 15,000 the following month. So they felt that they had to, you know, then they had to kind of pay attention to what was going on, you know.
It's funny because when you bring in the people like the Blassies, you know, you're able to fill up the place. And yeah. I think it's great bringing in people like that because it'll fill up the place. And you're not losing anything by this. You're not losing anything by having a Blassie in there, you know. I don't know why they did this in bringing up these, I don't want to call them B-wrestlers, but, you know, B-wrestlers coming up for a title shot that people get to see on TV every week. It was more of maybe like when you didn't see these guys, like the Blassies coming in, it's like, I got to go see this because we don't know when he's coming back. Yeah.
It was a little bit of stale booking, I think. And it was a little stale booking, and they had to come up with different ways to, you know, put Morales over. And, you know, they just kind of thought maybe it was guaranteed that he would sell the place out each and every month, and that's not the case. Hey, Bruno didn't sell the Garden out every single time.
He did a lot, though, because he talked about it. I remember hearing
he did
that.
A lot, but not, you know, the number they're saying is 188 appearances, sell out. That's not the case. I mean, I'm sure he sold out over 100 shows at the Garden, but I don't think Bruno sold out 188 shows.
You're trying to tell me something's fake here? They're smudging the numbers? How can this be?
Well, I mean, you know, pro wrestling, man.
Exactly. We're not at the end of the card yet. Like we talked about, they're going to put the title match before the end of the card. Pedro Morales defeated Professor Tanaka to retain the WWF Heavyweight Championship in 9 minutes, 59 seconds.
Yes, the champion Morales had the rematch with Tanaka. Defeats him, 9 minutes, 59 seconds, with the body, the flying body press off the top rope. And it was a, you know, Tanaka was always a believable heel with his karate chops and his martial arts capabilities. Very believable heel, and he always had the salt as kind of a secret weapon that he would throw in the corners before the match started. And then always kept a little baggie in his trunks just in case he needed it later on. But Tanaka was believable. He always was. He was very, he was one of those guys that you would genuinely like, this guy's legit. Him and Morales, say, you know, the crowd went nuts when Pedro wins. And there was always, and one thing about Morales, though, he was such a good bump taker. He flew over the top rope better than anybody had ever seen. He was able to fly over the top rope where you think the guy would be killed. He just had a way about him. And he was very believable when he was selling. That's when the crowd got, they erupted because they would surge the ring and, you know, and they would be fearful that he would be ready to losing, and then they'd be ready to riot. I mean, it was always kind of that mindset at the Garden is like, God forbid Morales loses here. There'll be a riot for sure. And Tanaka was one of those guys that were, you know, you would say, well, you know, maybe he could beat Morales, you know.
Go back a couple episodes, we were talking about there were no gates around the ring like there are today. There's no barrier. There
Not was at
a,
that time.
There was no. Like a string of some kind, maybe a rope, and you had security there
no,
checking things out.
No, it wasn't until, I believe, mid 74 to end of 74 where they put barricades around the ring.
You just said Morales used to go over the top rope, fall out over the top rope.
Yeah.
That is not something that happened probably at all during the whole card, right? It wasn't like guys are falling out of the top all, over the top rope no. all the time. Like today, when you see high spots, you see them in every match. There's all these great yeah. high spots. Back then, if someone went out of the ring, that was a big deal.
Oh, when you got tossed out over the top, that was serious stuff because that you didn't see it all the time.
Yeah, and that's what made it great because you didn't get to see it anymore.
And you know, the NWA had a rule. If you threw your opponent out over the top rope, it would be a disqualification.
I used to love when wrestlers used to come in and throw someone over the top rope and they're like, I lost? How did I lose? I can't believe this. Oh my gosh, you know, working those rules. And we talked about this gentleman earlier. Sonny King defeated Jimmy mm-hmm. Valiant in 14 minutes, 19 seconds.
Yeah, Valiant on his way out, obviously, before he comes back with his brother Johnny and wins the tag team titles in late 74. He was on his way out. Sonny King was getting a push, he beat Jimmy Valiant in 14 minutes, 19 seconds. And that might have been one of the last times. I think Valiant had appeared maybe a one other Garden show, which could have been the March show, and then he was gone.
Sonny King, a.k.a. Larry Johnson, began his career as a professional boxer. It was mm-hmm. Ernie Ladd who talked him into joining wrestling. And then later on, he became Chief J. Strongbow's tag team partner as they won the titles. Yeah. And this one was the first appearance of Sonny King at Madison Square Garden, which just ties in really nice with Black History Month.
Absolutely. And he was a good wrestler, had some great moves, and it was great to see him and Strongbow get the title.
And speaking of which, match number 8 of the night, Chief Jay Strongbow defeated Stan Stasiak in 8 minutes, 9 seconds.
Yeah, another guy that was on his way out, Stasiak, after a several-month run. And Strongbow, always a perennial favorite, always with the tomahawk chops and the Indian headdress and, you know, all the other things that made him so very special and one of the biggest fan favorites in the history of Madison Square Garden.
Absolutely. And Stan Stasiak, let's look at Stan Stasiak for a second. He had 6 Madison Square Garden appearances, 2 draws, one with Pedro and the other one with Jay Strongbow. 4 losses, Pedro, Gorilla, Victor Rivera, Jay Strongbow. And later on in December 73, he wins the title from Pedro. So it's just different. Mm-hmm. You know, we always talk about the whole Montreal screw job and how Bret Hart left. Here's a guy in the 70s that went on a whole losing streak in the territory, but came back to win a title again.
Yeah, I mean, he was a good hand, as they would say. He was reliable. He was believable. The Hart punch, his finishing move, was a devastating move. When you hit that Hart punch on somebody, they'd go down and that would be it. So he had a great finish, had a great finishing move, and he was a really, really good, believable performer.
It just shows what kind of a different time and different era this was, and that's why we do the show. Guys can lose so many times but still come back to win a title, where today, you know, you get that he's a loser, he's not that good anymore. If you're a jobber, you can't turn into a superstar, or if you're a superstar and you lose too many matches, you're never going to win again.
Yeah, I mean, back then, anything could happen. I mean, one thing about McMahon Sr. was, like, he had these visions and, you know, he would be planning stuff out sometimes a year in advance and what he was going to do. And he had a core group of guys that he'd bring back, guys like Koloff, and Stasiak is in that category. George Animal Steele. Of course, George was a college gym teacher, professor, so he only would work in the summers. But he had this core group of guys that he'd be bringing back that would be reliable. Tanaka is another one like that. And Blassie, who would come in, you know, to do what he would do. And I mean, it was really interesting booking back then. I mean, it was really simple booking when you look at what's going on in today's wrestling, and of course even the wrestling that we've been watching over the last 20-30 years. It all started to change when McMahon Jr. Took over, or he's not even McJr., but everyone called him Vinny Jr. But once his dad passed away and he took the company over and he took it national, he changed pro wrestling forever.
Oh, absolutely. How would you rate this card, John? You only had 2 matches over 10 minutes. How would this?
Like I said in the beginning, it wasn't something that you would be jumping up and down excited about. But the biggest part of the show for me, you know, after, you know, the Morales victory over Tanaka and Firpo, was the announcement for the following month. And that caused a pop that was the loudest of the night when they announced that Bruno Sammartino was going to come back and make an appearance at the March 13th, 1972 show. And they announced his opponent, the Smasher Sloan, who was a prominent wrestler and a tag team champion in the 60s. And Smasher Sloan had not been seen in the territory in a long time. So when they mentioned Sammartino versus Smasher Sloan, it was like, oh my God, Bruno's coming back and he's wrestling Smasher Sloan? I mean, most of the people who were at the arena didn't know who the heck that was.
I never heard of this guy before.
No, I mean, he actually was a tag team champion with Baron Mikel Cicluna. It was like during the first times that I watched pro wrestling in the mid-60s. That Sloan and Cicluna were the champions, and they actually lost to Spiro Sarion and Antonio Pugliese in a very historic show from Washington, D.C., And Sloan was one of those guys that was really a roughhouse type of guy, a brawler. And he would be appearing on television to help promote and hype that Sammartino match. Bruno, of course, didn't do the TV then. But Sloan was there, and they gave him some victories to lead up to that match with Bruno at the Garden the night my dad was with me.
I can't wait to hear about your dad and you going to the Garden together again. It's been almost, it's been a little while. It's been, how many, like 6 months, 8 months now? He went to your first show, and that was it.
No, he didn't. This was the only time. This one in March was the only time that he went to. He took me to a show in 1967.
There you go.
that we couldn't get in.
Gotcha. That's what it was.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest heartbreaks that I ever had, was the fact that I finally convinced him in 1967 to take me to a show, and I was 10 years old, and it was kind of like such an exciting show, because I knew when he said to me, all right, I'll take you to wrestling. And I was so excited, and the card, and I'm actually going to, if you can indulge me for a second here.
Let's hear what, you're going to tell me about the card you missed?
Yeah, the card was actually, it was February 27th, 1967.
So this is 5 years, 5 years to the month.
Yeah, it seems like a lot longer when you look at it, but no, it was 67, and it was Bruno Sammartino against Gorilla Monsoon in the main event. And I remember one of the things that it was, because we're talking about Smasher Sloan.
Yeah.
There was a referee named Jack Davis, who was kind of a really built referee. And there was an angle on TV where Smasher Sloan punched Jack Davis in a match. And Jack Davis challenged him to a wrestling match. And they booked it for Madison Square Garden on February 27th, 1967. So that was like, wow, I mean, I really want to see that one. And then there was, you know, my favorites. I mean, Antonio Pugliese, Spiros Arion, who had just come into the territory. He was going to be on the card against El Toro Bull Ortega. The Friendly Ox, who was Ox Baker, because he was the Friendly Ox initially. He was kind of a farm boy, and he was making his garden debut on that show. And there was an amazing six-man tag team match, Bobo Brazil, Armand Hussein, and Antonio Pugliese against Bill Miller, Dr. Bill Miller, Crazy Luke Graham, and Baron Cicluna. My dad convinced his buddy, who lived a block away, one of his best friends, to come. And my best friend was this guy's son. And it was us trekking into the city, and we're going to buy our tickets, and we buy our tickets, and then we can't get in. Because security was like, how old are you guys? And, you know, you got to be 14. And I'm telling you, it was a sad drive home. It was a sad drive home. And then I saw, you know, there was a photo spread in Wrestling World magazine of this card, which for me, it came out a few months later.
Yeah.
But looking at it, it was like, that's the night I tried to get in, and I couldn't. I was only 10.
Still makes you sad.
It does, because it was the old garden. It wasn't even the new garden.
Yeah.
It was the old garden. That show, you know, talking about Bruno not selling out every single show at the garden, that particular show only drew 13,872 people.
Wow.
So it was a small house with a $46,000 gate. But it led to a, you know, the Bruno Monsoon. And Monsoon was a monster heel from Manchuria. Couldn't speak a word of English, obviously, right? So that brought a very rare three-match series that started it out with Bruno losing on a countout. So I'm glad, kind of in a way, I wasn't there, because I would have seen Bruno lose via countout. And then they had a second match on March 27th, 1967, where it was actually a draw. It went to curfew. So it was the last match of the night. It was kind of crazy because the March 27th show drew 17,000 people from 13. And then the third match of the series only drew 11,000 on May 15th, 1967, where Bruno actually beat Monsoon.
Wow.
There's some history for you there, buddy.
Yeah. So it took you 5 years from that date, 5 years before you can get your dad back at the garden.
Yeah, 67, 69, 71, 72. It was 5 years. It
5 years.
Like a lot longer.
Yeah.
It was, I went from 10 years to 15 years old, you know.
So I'm looking forward to hearing that story of what your dad thought about wrestling at the garden, the place that you've been going all these months by yourself with your buddies. Hey, Dad, you coming with us this time? And I hope you're enjoying this retrospective of MSG Madison Square Garden shows. And if you want to hear this early, if you want to hear any of the podcasts early, if you want to live with the history, you got to go to our Patreon, patreon.com/John Arizzi. John's always adding new things to it. You get in for $5 a month. It's a great deal. And if you want to get more, you can get more. But like, you get to listen to Pro Wrestling Spotlight, the original shows from 1989 to 1995. You get to hear this show. You get to hear your new one, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight retrospective, where you go back and you listen to all those shows and you talk about them. What I love about those shows so much is you're going back and you're hearing about these matches. You're going, oh, wow, I know what's coming next. But at the time, how do they promote this? How are things promoted? You know, that's what I like about those shows. And what I love about this show is we're going back in time and we're going to these shows that I was never around for.
We're going back 50 years.
50 years. And I was
never
around for
this. Pro Wrestling Spotlight podcast goes back 30 years. Oh. This goes back 50 years.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. We have a two-part Cactus Jack Mick Foley podcast, you know, the best of Mick Foley, because he's agreed to come on the show and talk about how Pro Wrestling Spotlight influenced his career, and play some of the best of Mick Foley's Cactus Jack. And so, yeah, I mean, they're two different podcasts. I mean, this one goes way, way back, and you could reminisce, and it, you know, the memory of some of the shows that I went to 50 years ago was vivid. And others, like this particular show, you remember some of it, but not the majority of it.
Yeah.
As we proceed with these things, you know, I'm going to remember some matches vividly because they were so memorable and historic. And they also had something personal to me. Like in May, we'll talk about when Captain Lou Albano fought Chief J Strongbow. And that bloody match, it was just unbelievable. But that was, with my little Instamatic camera, that became the very first photograph I ever had published in a magazine.
Wow.
And I have that magazine. I got it. So I'm like, it's crazy. Anyway, it's fun to reminisce, Tim.
It is. And if you want to deep dive with us, if you're interested in this, fantastic. Love to have you on the Patreon. It's patreon.com/John Rizzi.
Yes.
But if you're listening to this and you're not on Patreon, you're listening to where you ever find your favorite podcasts, do us a favor. If you're enjoying the show, how about you check out the Patreon? But how even better if you go around and you pass this around to other people and go, hey, you know Mick Foley? Well, before he was Cactus Jack, before he was Dude Love, before he was all these people, John was with him and he used to have him on the show. You can listen to this for free. And if they like it, hopefully they'll be part of the Patreon and join the community. Yeah. And we'll build this thing up a little more.
It is a community. It's, you know, I always say that I have a very dedicated, hardcore fan base. I never had the luxury of having national TV exposure. So my fans, who are very loyal and very dedicated to what I do, they're still not the masses. I'm kind of the best kept secret in wrestling podcasts when you're talking about history.
Well, we don't have the backing. We don't have the backing of like one of these big companies behind us. That's another thing.
No, I don't have Conrad Thompson behind me, and you know, who is the biggest, the king of the podcast with all the historic shows that he's done. And even though we've had conversations that led to a falling out with Brian Last, and you know, who it is what it is.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? All I know is that, you know, I do what I do. I share as much history as I can with you. I think we have some really cool stuff and great memories. And Patreon is the place where you could really do a deep dive into the history of wrestling with content from the early 70s right through the mid 90s.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, John, if they have any stories of the garden or they have anything they want us to talk about, where can they find you?
Twitter at John Arizzi. I'm very active on Instagram at John Arizzi. We have three groups on Facebook, facebook.com/MattMemories. One is a private group, one is a public group. And then we have the Pro Wrestling Spotlight Facebook page as well. So look for us there, and there's plenty of that. And there's a YouTube channel. The channel is Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and we feature clips from the podcasts, and we also share some vintage wrestling stuff on there as well on the YouTube channel. So subscribe to that. I mean, you know, what I ask you to do, even listening to this podcast, we've gotten like 10 five-star reviews on Apple podcast for this show. So give us a good review. You know, it helps.
It really does.
And share it. There are links that you could share on your socials to say, hey, listen, I found this great show that talks about Madison Square Garden from 50 years ago. Here's the link. If you do that, the community grows. The listeners grow.
And, you know, we want to thank all our Patreons so far, and we want to thank people who are listening to this show. And I'm so happy you started talking about your Twitter and about your Instagram and stuff. And your Facebook. Let me ask you, John, where do you do the auctions at? Because you always do these great auctions with some wrestling memorabilia that we don't talk about enough.
Yeah, that should have been mentioned, right? Thank you for bringing it up, because that's also on Facebook. It's facebook.com/ facebook.com/John Arezzi's Vintage Wrestling Auctions.
So if you're listening to this wherever you are, go look it up. There could be an auction on right now of vintage stuff John has collected over the years, and we're getting to a certain point where John's like, look, I know what I like. I know what I need. I've distributed things to my family and friends, and this is all things that are really good, but I can't use them anymore, and maybe you don't like them.
Yeah, I have some wonderful magazines from the 60s. I have autographed pictures that go up. I have signed copies of the book, Matt Memories, on the auction site, and I'm doing these auctions twice a month, and we do them on the weekends. We typically put the stuff up on a Friday, and then we end the auctions on a Sunday night, and prices start, you know, $5, $10 for vintage magazine, and then people bid against each other. And but we put lots of magazines up there. When I say a lot, I could put a full year of Inside Wrestling from the 1980s up, the entire year, and start it off at $25. So, I mean, you're getting a great value of these vintage magazines at that Facebook.com, John Arezzi's Vintage Wrestling Auctions, that are there. And people have really enhanced their collection with this stuff.
But also, you're skipping over something. You have some vintage autographs. I remember you putting up one of Woman recently.
Yeah, I had several autograph items from her. I also had some contracts from the IWAS tours in Southeast Asia, Jake the Snake Roberts, Diamond Dallas Page. So, yeah, I put up all this kind of cool stuff that I don't use. I have copies of everything, but I'm like, there's no, you know, somebody would be able to appreciate this more than I do right now. And, you know, we're looking to get into the custom photography of the 70s, these vintage pictures, to find a way where people can get signed and numbered copies of them. And you know, I'm seriously been thinking about a Kickstarter campaign to do a coffee table book of these vintage pictures from the 70s. So there's a lot of stuff that's formulating. I just want to get fully healthy from COVID, get my energy back, because I do want to make the next few years something that's really special for fans of history, because when I'm done, I'm done. And like I said, I mean, you know, we'll be doing this show and the other podcast probably for another 2-3 years at least, right, until we catch up, and then it's over. I mean, then there's nothing else. Then it's like, all right, then you know, then it's time to do something else in life, and that's sit at a ballpark, hopefully, and watch my beloved New York Mets.
There you go. Everyone has a goal. Everyone needs a goal. Again, John, where can people find you on social media?
Twitter is at John Arezzi. Instagram, at John Arezzi. Three groups on Facebook. Matt Memories. So, I mean, I'm out there. Just even if you want to do a search engine on me, everything is there.
Everything's
just
there.
You know, just do a Google search on John Arezzi, and not only the book, but all my socials. Pages and pages and pages and pages and pages about me. 95% good, 2 or 3% neutral, and 2% not good. I read a review on my book today.
Oh, please tell.
That, quite frankly, I could not believe that the site allowed this review of my book on it. It was horrific stuff, most of it untrue. I mean, a guy just editorialized, and he says, not saying the book is bad, but this is what, you know, I mean, and he kept saying, and John's delivery in the audiobook is just, it's a 5 out of 5. And but the story he told my life story in this review of me being this horrible person that, you know, just scam people, and it's all I do. And I'm like, wow, who is this guy, and what did I do to him or her? And it just really kind of, it shook me to my core a little bit, because it was so untrue.
You know what? I've had reviews done on me before, and I got to look back at this guy or girl, and you got to go, well, I thank you for getting the audiobook. I thank you for reading my book. And I'm sorry I'm sorry for you, you know?
No
one likes to be slammed, but if someone takes up all this time and energy to write something like this, you feel bad for them because you're like...
I mean, it was like several paragraphs. It was almost like a book in itself, and I couldn't stop reading it, you know? And every other review on that page, and I'm not even going to give the page out, but every other review, there was probably six or seven others, were stunning. I mean, just stellar, and but this one thing, just like, and it's the one that leads off the reviews, and I'm like, my goodness, you know.
Some people, yeah, look,
some people are just whacked. For example, I'm not gonna mention a name or anything, but we got two new patrons this week. Okay, one of them joins, and I send a thank you note to everybody that joins Patreon on the Patreon side. Thank you so much for joining the community. I hope you appreciate the content. So I sent this person who subscribed for $5 a month a thank you and welcome to the Patreon, and thanks for joining the community. And within like 3 minutes, I get a response back: leave me alone. And I'm like, okay. And I was like, look at this. I mean, all I did was thank you for, you know, joining the community. And I just get a leave me alone with an exclamation point.
Like, I think sometimes think if they people put down their email address or anything, that they're going to get bombarded with spam.
Maybe they thought it was an automatic robo, whatever. But it was a heartfelt thank you, because every person who joins, I thank them. And it's important that they're joining, but this person is like, leave me alone. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'll leave you alone.
Well, we'll leave it at that. No good deed goes unpunished. Patreon.com/John Arizzi. Check it out. Next month, we're looking for Baron Miguel Sacluna has a title shot. Oh, my, against Pedro Morales. I can't explain this. Well, maybe we can figure out next month how this even came about. You know,
right, my dad and all that whole story with him.
Yeah. And once again, thank you, Scott Teal and Crowbar Press, for wrestling at the Garden. That is our backbone for the show. We talk about that all the time. So where can they pick that up, John?
Crowbarpress.com. I mean, it's my Bible when it comes to Madison Square Garden. It's called Wrestling in the Garden, published by Scott Teal, written by Scott Teal and J. Michael Kenyon. And it's a book filled with results and clippings, and it's available at crowbarpress.com. Pick it up. It's an amazing, amazing journal of history of Madison Square Garden.
And it goes great with the podcast.
Oh, it does. A great supplement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, John, that's it for us. Anything you want to add?
I'm good, my friend. It was great to do this again with you, and I know we've both been going through a lot of stuff.
Yep.
You know, life isn't easy, and life throws you curveballs, but we're here and trying to entertain everybody that's listening to us today, and we'll be back next month for a really interesting episode. But I wish you the best, Tim, and everything that you're going through right now.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you checking in with me to seeing how I'm feeling, and then, you know, being on top of this, and you knew I wasn't feeling up to it, and here we are, we're doing it, we got it in, we finished it, and I look forward to the next time.
Me too. For John Arizzi, I'm Tim Poutre. We'll see you next time.